Have you ever felt trapped between the desire to excel in your career and the need to find personal happiness and fulfillment? Are you struggling with the pressures of being a high achiever while also trying to be a present parent, partner, or friend? Today, I have an amazing interview to share with you. I'm talking with Dr. Anne Welsh, and she discusses how to navigate these crossroads and make life-changing pivots without losing sight of who you are. She also shares her insights on managing high-functioning anxiety and overcoming the feeling of failing at everything. If you feel stuck in a cycle of overcommitment and burnout, if you are unsure how to break free, you all, there's so much amazing information in today's episode about setting boundaries, about giving yourself permission to pursue your passions and your interests. If you're exploring these intersections of career, personal fulfillment, mental health, especially as they relate to women and mothers navigating the modern work and life dynamics, we unpack the complexities of making pivotal life decisions, recognizing personal desires over social expectations, and finding balance in one's personal and professional life. Y'all, grab a pen, listen in, let's do this. Do you want to feel less scattered and more focused, but the idea of goal setting sounds like adding more pressure to your already pressure-filled life? If so, welcome to the Plan Goal Plan podcast. I'm Danielle McGee. I'm a professor, mom, planner addict, and recovering overachiever. After years of hustle and grind, I was tired of trying harder. I was ready to try easier. At the intersection of research, practice, and play, I found a purposeful path to planning and goal setting that is fun, simple, and sustainable. If you're ready to try easier, if you're ready to make memories and do meaningful work, grab a pen. I will equip you with tools and practices to clarify purpose, reclaim time, and achieve goals, playfully and lightly. Let's get started. If you feel like your life is unraveling, like things are out of control, and you yearn to align your career aspirations and personal fulfillment while caring deeply for your mental health, keep listening. This episode's gonna be good. I have with me Dr. Anne Welsh, and she is a distinguished psychologist. She's an executive coach and a consultant. She began her career at Harvard and has since pivoted to bring together research and real-life experiences to hone leadership skills, improve emotional intelligence, and create work-life integration, which is amazing and such important work. And I'm so excited and honored to have you here with me. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for the warm welcome. I'm really excited to be here.
Hey, so tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me about this pivot. What inspired you to, you know, leave Harvard and explore this interplay between career aspirations, personal fulfillment, and women's mental health?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. In hindsight, my career was a lot of pivots over time. And I was actually super hard driving for the first, I don't know, big chunk of my life towards one thing. I was going to go to medical school and be a doctor. Both my parents were doctors. I liked science. I liked helping people. It kind of seemed very clear. My parents joked that I was born with a stethoscope in hand. Like, it was that obvious to me. And what's so funny is I got all the way into getting that medical school acceptance letter and I wasn't okay. Like, it was not what I wanted. And I knew that on a pretty deep gut level. So that was like the first pivot I made, which was pretty scary at the time. I ended up moving into psychology and I thought I was going to be a professor. I liked teaching. I liked research. So I started my research career. And in my research, I was looking at women's health issue and the transition to motherhood, and then also at career development. So kind of two different research tracks. And it was really interesting. But over the course of graduate school, I had started to really fall in love with clinical work and that one-on-one stuff. And so I pivoted again from an expectation to doing student mental health at Harvard. And that was like a dream job in a lot of ways. I loved university mental health. The students there were fascinating. They were so great to work with. But by that time, I had started to grow my own family and I had my second child. I actually have four kids now, but I had my second while I was at Harvard. And it just wasn't working anymore to do the hours of what could be pretty intense work and show up in a way that I wanted to for my kids. And so I actually initially tried to seek out some flexibility around hours, but they weren't willing to do it. And so I left and created my own firm. So what's interesting is that by the time I went into practice, I had all this extensive understanding about how careers develop over time, how people can navigate wellness in that space. And I had some insight into the unique challenges faced by women and mothers at work, again, both from my research and my personal work. At first, I was just a therapist in that space. I worked a lot with mothers and with I guess what people would call high functioning anxiety. And I started seeing so many of the same concerns over and over again. And some of them were about the person, but a lot of them were also about the system and big picture problems. So I ended up growing my business again and making a little bit of a pivot in response to that. Now I still have a therapy practice, but I also do the executive coaching and consulting around how corporations can have working parent-friendly policies and navigating parental leave and healthy workplaces so that I can kind of help from a really multifaceted way.
Ooh, I have so many questions. Right away, I'm a little bit curious about how you learned to recognize when it was time to pivot.
Yeah, I think it's this process of kind of getting quiet. So for me, it was often a solitary moments of listening to a whisper that usually was probably there for a while, but was really, really quiet because there's so much noise, right? We have so much noise around what everybody else wants for us, around what we maybe expected of ourselves. But each time there was just this voice that was constant, that was there, and that when I started to listen to it, like it felt right. So with that medical school acceptance, I mean, I remember I went to my brother actually, and I was like, I don't think I want to do this. He's like, and I said all the reasons why I should. And he's like, it sounds like you don't want to do this. I mean, it was really obvious to someone else. I was like, yeah, right. And so I made that choice, right? And I think again and again, it was kind of like, I knew it. And I would almost bring it to someone that I know would tell me that it was okay to do the thing I wanted to do, right? Like seeking out permission because I knew who the safe people were. And then as soon as someone else was like, of course, this makes sense, I was able to be like, okay, I'm going to do this big scary thing.
I love that. And it's so important to have those people in our lives that we can be vulnerable with, and they can be clear with about, you know, giving us permission and speaking back to us the things that we need to hear. I love that. And that's probably something that you also do in your coaching as well as your therapy practice. So, you know, tell me a little bit more about that work and what are some of the different concerns that you hear from working people, from people that are navigating this high functioning anxiety. Tell me some of the concerns that you're hearing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the number one top concern that I hear is overwhelm, right? And that's true in my therapy practice, it's true in my coaching practice, right? Essentially, people who perhaps are really high achievers feeling completely overwhelmed by the number of things they're being asked to do and not knowing what to do about that. I think that's the number one thing. And a close second is I feel like I'm failing. And I feel like I'm failing at work. I feel like I'm failing as a parent. I feel like I'm failing at being a spouse, at being a friend, at everything. You know, this sense that I'm the only one getting it wrong. Another big one is that people feel alone. Right. And I think these are all related, but people feel alone. They feel like I'm the only one that isn't getting it and nobody else can see that. And I don't have any support and I don't know where I'm supposed to make friends as an adult or how I'm supposed to get that village I've been told is out there. And then I think the last big one is just I'm not happy. Right. Like maybe I don't even know why I have this life that I thought I wanted. And I'm just actually really not happy with it. And now what do I do?
Yeah, I think it's so banana pants when you have these people that are wildly successful. Right. And you're chatting with them and from the outside really seems like they've checked off all the boxes. And then to hear that, like, oh, I don't feel like I've accomplished much. I feel alone and I feel like I'm failing. Helping people through that is so important. So what are some of the processes? Like, where do you start?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. On the one hand, I want to be able to tell you this is an easy three-step process. And to some extent, there is a general framework that I use, but really it's deep and nuanced work for each person. But that kind of get in there, the zoomed out big picture is that we have to start by getting rid of all the baggage around what you were supposed to want, what you're supposed to do, what everyone else wants for you. All of those shoulds, all of that can be coming from yourself, right? And things that you thought you were supposed to want from an early age, and you're just kind of filling those in. It can come from family messages. It can come from cultural messages about what you're supposed to be. It can come from media, from teachers, from your boss, whatever, but getting rid of it all. Not like that you're just going to go out and be super impulsive, but naming where all those expectations are coming from so that you can recognize what's someone else versus what is you. And then that second part is figuring out what is you, right? This is really, really hard work. You've got to get quiet, as I was saying, right? And listen to your own voice. It's there. You might have ignored it for your entire life. You know, they think particularly as women, we are socialized to not tune into what we want. And so trying to do that feels very, very hard and very, very unfamiliar. But once you can start to name those wants, your values, like what you're trying to get, then you can start making those behavioral changes, right? If you don't do that kind of pre-work, that behind the scenes stuff around what are your values and what is it that I want? If you just start to do a behavioral kind of pack, it's not going to stick. You need that why, that like sense of alignment behind it for it to actually make a difference. But once you have those whys and those values, you can start saying, okay, here I'm going to behave in this different way. I'm going to set boundaries differently. I'm going to, you know, do self-care in a different way than I have before, or do it at all because I wasn't, right? But you can make those changes with a little bit more ease if you have a shifted belief system behind it.
Absolutely. I had this experience myself, and I also see this with a lot of the people that I work with, is that they're getting frustrated with themselves because they'll set a goal and they'll try to change the behavior and it's just not happening. And they're like, well, why do I lack the discipline? Like, what's wrong with me? And like, come to find out that it was a should goal.
Yes.
That it wasn't really connected to their values or their desires. And that especially I work with a lot of women in their 40s. And I think that it's really easy to go, okay, well, what brings you joy? What do you delight in? And you list something that you liked in your 20s. And it's not that you don't like that thing anymore. It's that you've evolved. And so maybe in your 20s, you like playing volleyball. Maybe in your 40s, what you really like is cooking. So it shifts and it evolves. And like finding that is so, so important. So I love the care that you take to acknowledge the self-work that needs to happen before the behavior or alongside the behavior, rather than just jumping into these hacks. I mean, it'd be nice if we could just have hacks.
Right. But I mean, I see it so often where people come in saying, you know, oh, well, I've tried to get up at 5 a.m. to exercise and have that me time. Or, you know, I've tried to take this class or that class or whatever, and I just can't keep up with it. And it's a me problem. But then when we peel back the layers, there's a lot more there that's driving that failure to do it. And maybe that's not the right goal for them, but it's not because they themselves are flawed.
It's not that they aren't capable. It might even just be that's not the right thing for the season that they're in.
Exactly.
I sometimes describe it. It's like, I love to read and I love to read novels. And sometimes I'll start a novel and I'll start reading and I'm just like not feeling it. And so I'll put it away. And then a couple years later, I'll grab the same book and I'll just devour it. It's like I'm through it in a day. And it wasn't that the book, anything wrong with the book. It's just like I needed it at a different time.
Yes, totally. I actually had a conversation about that with my high school kid the other day because he's reading a book that he hates. And I was like, you know, there were books in high school that I hated and then reread as an adult and love. Yeah. And it's just a different mindset coming to it at a different point in your life.
Yeah. It's sort of where are you now and what do you need right now and what clicks might be different. So I know that one of the things that you talk about is this thing called the ambitious identity paradox. Can you tell me a little bit, like, what is this? Why do I need to know about it?
Yeah. And it relates to a lot of what we were already talking about. But it's this idea that maybe you're going after the wrong thing, right? Especially for those of us that are high achievers and are kind of going after some sort of external standard, right? Some external standard, that relentless drive for perfection, it ends up overshadowing your true values and keeps you from getting the thing that you do, right? So you go after ambition and achievement and perfection, and they're based on other people's wants. So the further you chase those, the more out of touch you get with yourself and the more unhappy that you feel. And so we have to go through this process, right, of figuring out what are you actually ambitious for? What are you ambitious for? What does success look like to you? And how can we shift those goals back into alignment and kind of tune in to something that's more intentional and personal?
I love that. I'm a overcommitter. I'm chronically overcommitted. And one of the things that I really realized about myself is that sometimes I don't trust that I have value to offer. And so what I do is I keep committing, trying to make myself feel valuable. And in the process of that, I am spread thin and then I can't do the work that really would make me feel fulfilled. I notice this all the time with my clients as well. So I think that that pattern that you're talking about is so prevalent. So you mentioned some things that you can do to alleviate this ambitious identity paradox. Can you talk a little bit more about how do we get to be intentional? How do we break the cycle and move into these spaces of intentionality?
Yeah. I mean, I always recommend by starting small, right? Because I think it can feel like the super daunting goal. And I would never go in and say to someone, like, just totally blow up your life, right? That might not be feasible. I think, again, you know, as I was saying, like, as women, we're socialized to tune out of what we want, right? From day one, we are told to be small, be quiet, be well-behaved, be good girls, right? Then, especially if you become a mother, it's like just double down on that. Now you really aren't allowed to have wants or needs. And so it feels like a gargantuan task to say, oh, I want this thing, this big, huge life change. But let's start with something simple. What do you want for dinner, right? Like, tuning into what do you want to watch on the TV, right? And maybe it's even a step before what you want of evaluating whether you want the thing that's being presented to you, right? So if I don't know, let's say we're doing takeout and my husband's like, oh, I want Mexican. I usually might just say, okay, because that's what he wants. So we'll just get that. Or my kids want pizza. All right, that's what they want. Let's get that. And just even start with, do I actually want this thing? I don't even have to ask for what I want instead yet. All I have to do at first is evaluate whether that's actually what I want. Maybe I don't know yet that I want Thai, but I know that I don't want pizza tonight. Okay, that's still a step, right? Naming what you don't want. The other thing that I encourage people to start playing with in those early stages is some sort of values assessment, values work. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. You can Google like values list and there's like really lengthy ones. People, if you want, can email me or go reach out to me on my website if you're listening to the show, and I'll send you a few like free values exercises. When we can start playing with what we value, then that again gives us something to like push against when we're trying to figure out what we want. Right. So for in your example, right, if you're someone that's overcommitted and you know that you really value, you know, being present with your family. Okay, well, if I'm saying yes to everything, I'm kind of not working with that value and I'm going to be unhappy. So I'm going to have to figure out a way to maybe say no to something. Right. So it's just it's a little bit of a structure to use when you're starting to think about what do I want and what do I not want.
I love the idea of naming what you don't want. I know that it's sometimes hard for me to go, oh, well, what do you want for dinner? Totally. Or what do you value? And I think that it's sometimes easier to start by naming, I know what I don't want. And I think that that's such a beautiful entrance to that conversation. And that then you can work yourself to really defining what it is that you do want. Because I know that when I'm in a space of burnout and overcommitment, just it feels like another decision, something as simple as eating dinner. And so I love this idea of like, maybe you just start by articulating, I don't really want pizza.
Right.
That's great. So once you kind of name what your values are and what it is that you do want, how do you give yourself permission to actually have it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that is the big challenge, right? Is how do I get it? And part of it is learning to disappoint people. Mm-hmm. Because I think not naming what we want so often plays into perfectionism and people pleasing and a sense of low self-worth. And so we have to learn that, like, yeah, our needs and our wants are gonna inconvenience people. And that is okay, right? You can't have what you want and not inconvenience people. We let ourselves be inconvenienced all the time. It's that slow process of practicing. Practice disappointing someone that maybe you trust first, right? I mean, and not to stick with food, but let's say, you know, that my kids want pizza and I don't want pizza. And I say, guys, can we come up with something else? I know I don't want pizza. Is there a second choice? Are they going to be mildly disappointed that they're not getting pizza? Sure. Is that okay? Are they going to survive? I guarantee it, right? No one has ever come into my office for therapy because their parents didn't let them get pizza one time. But it's practicing building new neural pathways. And it is proving time and time again to your brain that you are safe while you do this new thing. And so that's where the small steps really matter and build up over time.
Yeah, let's build those new neural pathways. I love that. And it's so important. I remember right after I had my kiddos, I'd read a book that talked about the neuroplasticity right after pregnancy. And I was like, all right, let's go get it. I love this idea, though, of just practicing in safe places. One of the things that I'm really intrigued by is just this concept of having it all and ways that particularly I feel like my generation was told you can have it all. And now we're really reckoning with that, trying to navigate that, try to redefine what having it all is for us. You know, do you think that working moms can have it all? I tell me, I want to hear your point of view on this.
I think that you have to define what having it all means to you, right? So can you be CEO of a Fortune 500 company and a good mom? You bet you can. You can totally do both those things. Is that easy? No. Can you also then be PTA president and present at every single soccer game and not have a full-time childcare help and never miss an email that came through at work? Nope. Right? Like you can, you have to figure out for me and my life and my values and my goals, what does it all mean? And there's not a right or wrong answer there, right? There is not a perfect way to parent. There is not a perfect way to show up as an employee, right? If there was a perfect way to be a mother, we wouldn't have three books that all disagree with each other on how to parent, right? That's the reality. So I think that's the starting point, is redefine what it all even means. And then recognize that this is a process, right? When we talk about work-life balance, people so often get kind of rigid and think of it as this state, like somehow I'll magically get to a place where it is balanced and I won't have to think about it again. That's not even what balance is in the real world, right? Like if you are standing on one foot, you're making micro movements all the time. And you may even like completely topple to the side and then have to wiggle back to the other side. And it's all movement. And that's what balance looks like for work and life, right? You're going to have seasons that you're leaning into work and seasons that you're leaning into home. And those seasons could be a week. They could be a month. They could be a year. That's all okay. It's this ongoing kind of iterative process of becoming over time.
Yeah, I love that. I remember having a huge insight about what balance is in one of my yoga classes. I was in tree pose and I had really the revelation that you just described. Yeah. That like, it wasn't like I was in tree pose and I caught it and it just stayed like that. It required effort. And I do think that there's times where what we describe is what we want is balance, when what we really want is things to be easier.
Yes.
Or there to be less things. And I think having the courage to name that as it is important too. So if there is one piece of advice that you could offer my listeners, like where could they start? What's the first step? What would you say to them?
I think, you know, two things. One, and kind of directly in relation to your last point, it's okay to put things down, right? If you feel like you're juggling too many things, put some of those balls down intentionally. You don't have to juggle them all. There are a lot of balls that maybe feel important and are going to be just fine if you ignore them, right? Whether that's you live out of laundry baskets and don't ever fold laundry for the next 3 years, it's going to be okay. Right? Again, that is not something that anyone has ever come into therapy for, right? That would be piece one. And find a minute. I'm not talking about an hour of meditation on a pillow. I am talking about a minute to be present with yourself if you can every day, right? It could literally be, I hold a hot cup of tea and notice the sensation of the heat on my hands for 1 minute. Whatever that micro step is to build a practice of self-awareness and kind of turning inward, take it. Because again, it's just those little things that add up over time. If you got 2 minutes instead of one, even better, right? If you've got 5 minutes to journal, go for it. But whatever it is, right? Don't prevent yourself from starting because you say you don't have time. Even one breath that is intentional where you actually feel that breath starts building kind of a process step by step.
I love that. So if my listeners wanted to connect with you, because you're amazing, how could they do that?
Yeah. Well, the easiest place to find out more about me is my website, which is drannwalsh.com. They can learn about all of my different services there. They also can get access to a free masterclass on perfectionism and burnout on the website, just at the bottom. Then they can find me on Instagram it's at drwalsh.coaching or on LinkedIn at Dr. Ann Walsh as well.
What a gift. Thank you so much. It's been a joy to have you here.
Awesome. Thank you again for having me on.
If this podcast has inspired you, guided you, or just made you laugh, the number one way that you can thank me is by leaving a written review for the show over on Apple Podcasts. I'm seriously tickled every time that I hear from you all, so pop onto Instagram and follow Plan Go Plan and digital message me. I want to say hello. I want to geek out about all things planning and goal setting. Keep sensing the possibilities, y'all.